On Pilot TV this week, we're looking for a presidential killer alongside Sterling K. Brown in Paradise on Disney Plus, grilling the Iron Lady with Steve Coogan in Brian and Maggie on Channel 4, and returning to the MMO mayhem of Mythic Quest as that show begins its full season on Apple TV Plus. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is still reeling from the finale of Silo from last week. So much so, in fact, that Empire's Ben Travis and John Nugent jumped online with me and recorded a big old spoiler special for Did that one, which you can hear now on Pilot Plus. These two weren't invited.
News to me.
But it's on the Pilot Plus feed now, and it also includes some of the interview I did with the showrunner, Graham Yost, when I was on set last year for seasons 3 and 4. But enough post-apocalyptic chat. The world has not ended after all, at least not yet. But on the bright side, I am joined by the two people I would most like to weather the end of days with. Kay Ribeiro, who would give him the most persistent zombie, I like to think short shrift, and Boyd Hilton, whose giant TV also doubles as a fallout shelter. How are we? Are we good? How are you doing?
Quite touched, James. That's the nicest intro you've given us so far.
I like to think of that's what purgatory will be. Like, the world will end and you, me and Boydie, the three of us, will be in this studio for all eternity.
Mm-hmm. Severance.
Talking we'll about TV shows. Yeah.
Forgetting everything outside. We'll be stuck in this studio forever.
Yeah.
You're talking about the bloody West Wing.
That's right.
My gosh.
And you continually referring to Seinfeld and pretending it's better than Friends.
Yep.
That, you know, that stuff.
Facts. Yeah. Facts. Yeah.
I don't think I'd cope.
Do you know what? If it was actual hell, okay, I believe you'd be refereeing an eternal debate about fucking breeders.
Oh, my God.
That
can
is,
you imagine?
That is my idea of hell.
Yeah. And mine.
Well,
I would not tolerate any of this.
That's it.
I would get very, you know.
You'd be like Phoebe and Friends when she's got both by her ears.
Yes.
Like, you know. And we'd be like,
I would show you a lot of tough love. That's what I'm saying. It would, I would not tolerate any of it. But anyway, fortunately, we have to contemplate that.
Yeah, enough BDSM fantasies from Kay. Let's move on to what we've been watching. Okay, let's start with you.
Oh, dear. Right, things I've been watching. Now, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because some of these things we might be reviewing.
Oh, I see.
Some of them might be embargoed.
Classic.
Miss Austin, which James, I think, would not allow us to review because he's... are you anti-period
drama? No, we're talking about. We're definitely reviewing Miss Austin.
What's wrong with... I love Jane Austen. I've got no problem with Jane Austen.
Oh, fine.
Without wishing to interrupt at this early stage, the only slight problem with Miss Austen, I looked into it because Miss Austen is actually in the week we're covering at the moment on the Sunday. It's one of these Sunday ones.
Ooh.
But I actually specifically asked the BBC and it is embargoed until the Tuesday.
So, Pilot Plus?
Pilot Plus.
Pilot Plus for Miss Austin. There we go. We've made a decision because one of the things I was going to say this episode is I didn't know what we were going to do on Pilot Plus and now we know.
Yeah, there you go. But
Miss Austin.
And that is great for me because I've watched all episodes because I hosted the screening.
Oh, so, in the pocket of big Austin there. Yeah.
Yes, and that's the period drama about Jane Austen and her sister Cassandra starring Keely Hawes, which we'll be doing apparently on Pilot Plus.
Yes.
Cassandra.
Also, I watched the first episode of Unforgotten Series 6.
Just the first one.
Yes, because that's all I had time for.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure they gave you 3 episodes.
Why, how many have you watched?
I've seen none. They've given me absolutely none of them, and I'm absolutely furious about it.
They gave Kay 3 episodes?
Because she literally told us yesterday.
Oh.
Oh, did I?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
Gosh.
You did, because you were lording it over us, because you'd seen episodes
of
Unforgotten.
Much. That's your shtick.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, I watched the first episode of that. I don't think I can say what I think about it, but it wasn't a chore for me to watch.
Okay, okay. Embargo just shattered by your feet there. That's
I'm
fine.
Saying it wasn't a chore.
Oh, okay.
It's like you work for The Guardian or something, these embargoes. shattering.
And
by the way, the thing I forgot, I just remembered, you know, when I was talking in Pilot Plus about the Leo Woodall show that I hosted the Q&A for last week.
Prime Target.
Yeah. And one of the things I talked about how the producers are fans of this podcast. And when I was talking about it, I said, because of course we couldn't review it in the normal pilot. And they said, because it's heavily embargoed. They knew the
in
phrase.
Jokes.
In joke. How about that? Carry on. Sorry for
interrupting. But crucially, they didn't lift the embargo.
No, they didn't. They did
I don't
not.
Think that was within their power. It's Apple TV, isn't it? It's like that's
they're big wigs. Anyways, last night I went to the screening of Big Boys, the final series, and I absolutely had a fun time.
And that was entirely due to the canapes, wasn't it, Kate?
Yes.
It was the catering.
No, actually, legit it was because
you've done a whole. This used to be me
canapes.
Doing all these shows that I've seen yet.
She's coming
me
for you,
having to be careful, and then you literally are taking over the whole.
I'm
thing.
Not. He's had a big project on. That's why Boyd's been grounded for a bit. But the canapes were delicious. I have to say, I stuffed my face, and they also had Aperol spritzes that I don't usually like Aperol spritz. But these were fantastic.
What have we got against Aperol Spritz?
Yeah.
I don't know, I don't usually like them, but these were quite sweet, which appealed to me.
Oh, Aperol Spritz is quite sweet. Anyway.
Mm. See, she's taking food from your mouth. You know what's happened here? You know what's happened here? Queen takes rook.
100%.
Very good.
Bit of chess humour.
Jack Rook was on good form, and actually Graham Norton was hosting, and he was very fun.
Oh, I mean, to be fair, once you get Graham Norton to host, that's above me and you, isn't it?
Oh my God, yeah. Host. The only thing that like was not better than Graham Norton, but like when I went to a screening and it wasn't you hosting, because I think Boyd is obviously the best, was Sue Perkins when she did the Rivals screening.
Oh yeah, Perks.
Oh, yeah. She was amazing.
Very good.
Yeah.
To be fair to me, I would have come to the screening of Big Boys, but Arsenal were slaughtering an inferior team.
Oh, I'm sure Jack would be happy to hear that. You put Arsenal above his fantastic comedy.
It's not a case of that. It's just, you know.
Oh, I think it was. I think it was.
I mean, it's literally.
I'll be able to see.
You prioritised, didn't you?
No. So, in fact, the food belongs in my mouth because you deserve it.
Yeah, a little bit. But I do an Arsenal podcast, you see, every week, and I have to see what Arsenal.
So, you're saying it was research?
It was absolutely. There was no way out of it. I had to do it.
It was work.
Given the subject matter of the show, were the canapés, was the catering just student food? Was it like beans on toast and like fish fingers?
No, it was elevated and delicious.
It was the Ham Yard Hotel, wasn't it?
Yes.
So, because the Ham Yard, as I've mentioned before, I think, on this podcast, has is the best for canapés
100%.
Out of all of the screening rooms in London. Did they have the chicken burgers?
As you know, Boyd, I'm a pescatarian.
Yeah.
I don't eat meat.
No.
Boyd's a vegetarian who eats chicken. That's an interesting fact for our listeners.
And fish.
Yeah. Do you know what? For years I've been ripping it out of him for this, because he goes, yeah, I'm a vegetarian. And I was like, you eat chicken? Yeah.
No, I don't call myself a chicken. Absolutely not true.
For all the people who think Boyd's super intelligent and, you know, like this. Yeah.
Oh. What are you saying?
No, but as in like...
I'm an idiot now because I eat chicken and fish.
Well, no, you've got to admit, say you're a vegetarian.
Call myself a vegetarian. As you know full well, you absolute horrendous liar.
I was
going to
say, what is the word for a vegetarian that eats chicken?
Yeah. He has in the past. He no longer says he's vegetarian. To be fair to him, he's...
Yeah, when I was a vegetarian and I didn't eat... chicken or fish. Yeah.
Okay, fine.
When I was like 9
anyway,
years old.
I don't think the listeners tuned in to hear about your lies about chicken.
I'm a Haribo-tarian.
Oh, God, James.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. I'm worried about your diabetes.
I don't have diabetes.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on from illnesses and foul, that was my evening last night.
Very nice.
Mm.
Boy, was there anything left for you to do?
Like,
no. Kay's stolen all of highfalutin events.
Yeah, went to Arsenal, watching football. It was an incredible night in the Champions League, actually. Last night, I was recording this on Thursday. Yeah, it was.
Did you win?
Man City, we won 3-0.
Don't encourage him.
Man City were 2-0 up, and they lost 4-2 in the end to PSG, Paris Saint-Germain. Anyway, I won't talk about that. What I was going to mention was, I also won't mention the fact that we've just been watching, what I've been watching in the last half an hour is the Academy Award nominations. And as James pointed out, quite rightly.
The three-star film,
the
A Complete
three-star
Unknown.
The three-star film, A Complete Unknown.
Did all right.
Three Stars Empire got nominated loads for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Director, etc. And please God, let's hope it wins, because it's my favourite film.
No.
Actually, Substance also did brilliantly. In fact, my three favourite films of the year, The Substance, Complete Unknown, and Conclave, all did very, very well. And I hope they win them all.
I'm Team Conclave. Conclave. I do think it's, well, we'll get onto this in the Empire podcast. I think it's mad the Best Supporting Actress nomination the Conclave got.
Oh, it is.
But other than that.
Wait, you're going to cover this on the actual film podcast?
Yeah, it's mad.
All right. Policing my gratuitous
use. Sorry, I feel like, you know, after the chicken, I feel like I'm really going for you. Sorry.
Yeah, so this is a TV podcast, but we talk about Oscars, so it's like Boydie is a vegetarian that eats chicken, so it's like selective.
Listen, if you want to cut this out of this podcast and put it into the Empire, that's fine.
Oh, an insert.
That's fine. Chris Pugh won't mind.
No, he'll love
I'm
it.
Sure
love
he
it.
Would be delighted.
He would lap it.
Delighted.
Like you
and
the chicken.
Before I finish, it's almost, please, the brutalist. No, I can't win. It's ridiculous. Anyway, I'll move on from that. And what I wanted to talk about was Saturday Night TV. You'll appreciate this, Kate. Mm-hmm. James won't. But it's really good at the moment.
Gladiators.
Listen, okay, Gladiators, BBC One, Gladiators, Michael McIntyre's Big Show, brilliant. Brilliantly produced, incredibly entertaining.
I've seen snippets.
You got to watch it, it's fantastic.
It's
There's a segment in it, Send to All, where he takes the phone from a celebrity. The one that's coming up on Saturday, as we record this, it will have been on Saturday, is Michael Sheen. And when he goes through and he sends messages to people in their phone book, in their iPhone.
Is it real? Yeah.
I mean, it is real. It's real with, like, I can't go, it is real, yeah. I mean, he does message all the people in their phone book, yeah. It's incredible. And it yields genuinely hilarious results. But it's just a relentlessly inventive big entertainment show. James looking at me like, what the fuck are you talking about? The Weakest Link, Ramesh Ranganathan's version of The Weakest Link is fantastically entertaining. I don't know if you've watched many.
Yes, I have.
But his spin on it, the whole tone he has is so funny with the contestants. Then pointless celebrities. I mean, you know, fine, whatever. Always entertaining. Then on ITV at the moment, The Masked Singer, 7 o'clock. Fantastic.
Fun
always,
for all the family.
Always entertaining. They have brilliant guest judges now. Jonathan Ross is in it. They have Gretchen Davina, but they have really interesting. They have French and Saunders in the Christmas one.
Did Macy Gray
walked off. Exactly. That was incredibly dramatic. A couple of weeks ago, in a mood, she was pissed off. She was voted off the show by the celebrity panel. And then up until last weekend, you had Anton Deck's Limitless Swim, which is an excellent game show format, fantastic format, which is all about numbers of things. And people win up to over like £1 million.
I think I've seen that. Is that the one that's really convoluted and hard to understand?
No, it's easy to understand.
Oh, really? Oh.
I mean, the fact that you haven't seen it, I mean, if you see it, then you can tell.
Oh, I thought,
what
was the last one they had, which was complicated?
They did one years ago, like a game. This is the game show they've done in recent times that works really well and is bigger here. It's very simple. Basically, you just have to work out numbers of things, like, you know, if it was like, how many inches is James's forehead?
Jesus Christ, I wonder where that was going.
You have to estimate. Two, right? And then if it's through, anyway, you get lives. It's very simple. It's very straightforward, but it's really gripping and compelling. And you can potentially win vast amounts of money. It's limitless, the win. See, as in the title.
Where does my forehead end, Boyd, if I'm honest with you? Because being, as a bald man,
I know,
there's no clear delineation between head and forehead. Well, so it's really just one expansive dome.
I know. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I mean, I'm the same. I can't.
It's tough to judge. Yeah.
I don't know what the definition is. And then, but this week, going out on ITV now is the new series of the 1% Club, which is the most successful ratings-wise new quiz show format for years and years. That's the one hosted by Lee Mack, and that is all about kind of IQ-style questions, which are quite difficult, and you go down to literally the 1% of people who can answer, who are brainy enough, have the IQ high enough to answer the fiendishly challenging questions. So I'm just saying, ignoring this podcast's, you know, penchant, quite rightly, our whole raison d'etre, I've suddenly gone French, our whole raison d'etre is high-end scripted television, absolutely. But in the fantastic, what have you watching? So the reality is, Saturday Night TV is brilliant. Why go out?
You feel like you get an amnesty in this particular section to talk about all this stuff.
Exactly.
Can you give me an example?
Let alone, we haven't even talked about The Traitors. The Traitors will have finished by the time it gets out. The final is tomorrow. Thankfully. I bet even your Empire co-workers talk about The Traitors.
Actually, do you know what? No one has mentioned it.
Really?
No one has mentioned it. I don't know if any of them watch it.
Well, the rest of the office is on other magazines are obsessed. So the final will have gone out on, and the one last night was fantastic. So that's as good as ever as well. What were you going to ask me?
I was going to ask you your questions that only the 1% of people can answer. I wondered if you could give us all an example.
Oh.
Is it like formula or is it like general knowledge? Like, it's not like, it's, you know,
no,
what type of vegetable is a chicken, that kind of thing.
No, it's not like that. They're like puzzle questions. So they're almost like, why, you know, the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog.
Yeah.
Why is that? Like, why? Like, what's, there's a hidden question in that sentence or something.
Because it contains every letter of the alphabet.
Why are there, how many numbers are there in a prime number sequence or something like that? It's those types of things. It's like sequences.
You want to ask Leo Woodall about that?
Yeah, Leo would be great in it, yeah, to be fair.
If he was the character.
Yes. If he was the character.
If he was indeed the character.
Edward from Prime Target would smash it.
Yeah.
The 1% Club. But it's those, they're really difficult. So it's quite interesting. This is becoming
such a popular
hit. I bet you
get loads right.
No, I don't. You know, I get down to like the last, you know, maybe like the midway point. But no, they're really difficult.
Hmm.
Yeah. There we go. Now, I'll bring in a sample of question from
the do quizzes.
Yeah,
quizzes.
Quiz,
and we'll be like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But Lee Mack's very funny in hosting as well, of course.
James, what have you been watching?
I don't know that I've been watching anything that I haven't already discussed with you.
Oh,
so
dear.
One of the things I have been doing is listening to a lot of, weirdly, Dungeons & Dragons podcasts.
Oh.
Because I'm trying... No, this is absolutely true. I'm trying to get an office D&D game off the ground.
Oh, you.
Feel free to join. Would you like to join? Okay, I see you as a kind of half-elf rogue.
I can't even tell if this is insulting or not. Is it? It was like your opening monologue when you said that thing. I was like, it took me two seconds to think, is he dissing me? I can't tell. Is that an insult, James?
Not really, no.
Oh, fine. Okay, yeah. I can see myself then.
Yeah, good.
As that.
Yeah, so I am, as Daniel Ocean once said, putting a team together.
Anyone even vaguely interested yet?
Yes, Nick. Yes. Oh. Chris and Helen are on board.
Chris and Helen.
Empire's John Nugent is a big old D&D head. He has his own game that he runs.
You're kidding me.
No, he does it all the time. He's got a half-elf druid. I can't remember its name, though.
Oh, my God.
He's been doing it for years.
I did not see that coming.
It's one of his... he has a group of friends. They're actually they're improv actors. Like, you know that play that goes wrong? Like, his friends do that.
Oh, wow.
I knew that.
Yeah, exactly. So he's connected. And they have a D&D game, and a lot of them are improv comedians, so it's properly funny stuff.
When I hosted a thing for the TV version of the Mischief theatre group, and I remember the guy saying, I know you're one of your colleagues at Empire, John Newton.
That's right.
That's brilliant.
But he does D&D with them.
Oh,
so John is going to come and help. So we're trying to see if we can put together a fun team to do an adventure.
I have no concept of how Dungeons & Dragons works.
Well, so funnily enough, I'm not sure. I mean, I had an idea because I play video games based on D&D, but I've never done proper role-play D&D.
Yeah.
So I've been listening to...
Wait, sorry, can I just interrupt? When you said this, I thought you meant an online game together.
No.
Do you mean you're going to get dressed up?
No, that's laughing. We're not laughing.
Gather.
There'll
they
be no laughing.
Gather,
So we will gather around a table with our D20s and and the Dungeon Master will fabricate for us a narrative and we will act it out and, you know, play our characters.
There's no board. It's not like a board.
Well, I think you can do it with little maps and figures as well, but you need to.
No.
So I was kind of like, I wanted to get a feel for the rhythms of the game. So there's a few different parts. Obviously, Critical Role is very famous, but it's a bit impenetrable. It's quite hard to access. But there are a couple of... there's a podcast I found was really good, and it's called Girls Who Don't D&D. And it's basically a dungeon master got these three women together, and they had no idea what D&D was. They don't know anything about it, and they begin doing this game, and they're very, very funny. But because they know nothing about D&D, it's also a bit of a tutorial as to how the game works. So
there's a famous Hollywood actor who does D&D.
Oh, it's loads of them.
Who's the one I'm thinking of?
Vin Diesel for one.
Vin Diesel, maybe.
But there are a lot of them. Mm. Yeah, and a lot of the Critical Role, they're all voice actors. They're all quite famous.
Do you think I'd like D&D?
Yes, Kay.
Do you think so?
No.
Oh.
Not even a little
evidently
bit.
Evidently being sarcastic.
You describe these women who didn't like it and suddenly...
I mean, you might... Well, so, it's first of all, you'd need to have tolerance for the setting. So classic D&D is a kind of high fantasy setting.
Nope.
So you need... No, see, she's out already. And then you've also got to be into the whole kind of like acting out a role type aspect of it as well. So you may
be
out on both counts.
Your eyes light up. No, I'm out. I'm totally out.
She's out. She's gone.
Yeah.
There's also apparently a very good alien-based role-playing, as in the film Alien. There's a role-playing game based on that. So I'd quite like to give that a go.
Do you want
to
get involved?
No. I mean, I'm not against it, but I just don't have the time.
It doesn't have the time.
No. It's quite time-consuming, isn't it? I don't know how Chris Hewitt does it.
He's never done it.
Hewitt's playing golf all the time.
That's true, he is. We'll take him off the course and we'll set him up with this. But anyway, what I've been watching, not listening to, that's not what this section's called. So I have been watching, if people listen to Pilot Plus, they will know I've been watching Taskmaster, because we had to watch that for Pilot Plus.
Taskmaster.
Like
you said it.
So I watched an episode of that. But the main thing I've been watching, apart from one of the shows this week, which we will talk about a little bit later on, I have binged one of those. But Prime Target, I've been watching Prime Target on Apple TV Plus, which we reviewed on the most recent Pilot Plus, but which I am enjoying.
Which episode are you up to?
I've only seen the first three. I'm planning to watch some more on the weekend. But
have you seen Leo's gratuitous bum shot?
Do you know, I haven't seen
the gratuitous bum shot. It might be in four.
Do you know, have I seen the bum shot? I don't think I've seen the bum shot. I think I would remember. I've seen Fra Fee's boxes a fair old bit. And his extraordinary pectoral muscles, they make quite a showing.
He's ripped.
Yeah, he is quite ripped. I'm not quite sure how Leo Woodall's character finds the time to go to the gym in between all of his mathematical stuff, but apparently he does.
He's
like Jack Reacher. Yeah, it's his natural physique. Yeah. He's born that way. Yeah. I don't recall maths nerds at university being quite so ripped, but you know what? Well, fair enough.
The funny thing I noticed, because I wrote a review of it for Heat this very day, and so I thought...
Completely impartial and unbiased as you are.
100%. Yeah. Well, I watched it ages ago in prep for the thing I hosted with him. But my favourite thing that I noticed was, I didn't notice the first time, his outfit in the middle of, I think, episode one or two, when it's basically set, you know, in the summer or spring or whatever, he wears two t-shirts, a shirt, an overshirt, a cardigan, and a tweed jacket. Took about layering. I mean, it's ridiculous.
There's definitely going to be fashion features on it.
That is the most far-fetched part of the show.
Yeah, it is. I mean, forget the rest of it. Yeah, flying around the world with, you know, Quintessa Swindell. But it is really funny how many layers he's wearing. And obviously, just to underline the point, he's wearing tweed because he is an academic.
But also, I love that he's an academic, but he's also like a nerd. And so to make out that he's a nerd, he wears lots of little geeky badges on his lapels. He's got little badges on there. It's like, oh, yeah, no box ticked. But yes, I did. I'm enjoying it.
I wish I'd taken the opportunity to ask him whether he minded wearing so many layers.
That should have been your first question.
Yeah, were you hot?
Were you hot? Not like that. I mean, literally. Yeah. Were you warm?
Maybe that's why he had his bum out.
Yeah, maybe that is.
Aeration.
Well, it's quite the contrast, because one minute he's wearing like eight layers, next minute he's totally naked. It's like you don't know whether you're coming or going. Okay?
Wow, quite literally.
Well, if you want to see Buns of Steel, it's streaming now on Apple TV Plus. So enjoy that. Okay, I guess that's what we've been watching. Shall we move on to our listener question, Kay?
Is there one?
We don't know. She hasn't informed
us. Who knows?
There is one. Just bear with. Okay, this question comes from Alex, who says, with the excellent Landman finishing this week, what was the best show of 2024 that came out of nowhere or that you were completely unaware of until it dropped? Love the show, but more swearing, please.
That's aimed at you.
Haven't I been good?
I mean, good is not the word I would choose to describe your abstinence from expletives, but sure.
Hmm. I've shown a lot of,
I should have to dial my twattery up a few notches to see if I can really
provoke
something.
Listen, you have tested me, I would say. So the two that I thought of, but I don't know if I'm correct in this, maybe it's just wasn't on my radar, but I felt like Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, I didn't realise how big that was going to be.
I don't think anyone did. No one could have predicted the effect that would have.
And also Baby Reindeer. Did they do a lot of promo before it came out?
Well, this is famously that they were hounding us to interview the cast and creator of Baby Reindeer before it came out. We were like, I've never heard of it. What is this?
Yeah.
And we dropped the ball spectacularly on that one.
I was not involved in that decision.
No, we fucked that. It has to be said. So that did come completely out of nowhere. We didn't know who he was. We didn't know what it was. And we certainly didn't know what it would become. So, that's it. Pilot
More
TV. Finger on the pulse. that came out of nowhere. That's tricky because Supercell actually was at Netflix's big preview event, which we're going to the next one of this week. So we kind of knew that was coming, and Ratman had spoken about that.
He did such a good job selling it. Yeah,
I agree.
I mean, especially because Kay didn't give us advance warning of this message.
I'm
sent it to you.
When?
Let me check.
Lies. Boldly said that.
Lies.
But actually, you didn't.
Wait a minute.
I'm pretty confident.
No, maybe I didn't.
No, you definitely didn't.
You definitely didn't.
I mean, in a way, Shogun was a big surprise, wasn't it?
Shogun.
Do you know what I mean? Because I think, I remember the original TV version of Shogun, and it was quite... It was very popular, but it was quite cheesy.
Yes.
And this version was so classy and kind of magisterial, I'm suddenly using that word about it, that I think it was a surprise. I just don't think we were expecting it to be that good.
I was expecting it to be very good. I didn't know it would be the show of the year.
But that's because he had binge-watched it, don't you remember? And then he was banging on
about it. I was like, it's a big show. It's a big Disney Plus show. Yeah. It's got all these great people in it. It's clearly lavish and bold and all of these things that we talk about. But I mean, it looked like a high production value thing. It was epic in scope. I didn't think it would be as good as it was. But
no, it's mainly that.
I expected it to be very good.
Yeah, I don't think anyone expected it to be the show of the year for a lot of people.
Yeah.
James, you didn't know specifically that the subtitles would get you all,
I didn't know they would turn me into a subtitle fascist. Yeah. No. I mean, I'm not entirely surprised, but I didn't know that. No, that was a surprise. That I would become... I could never have predicted how invested I would become in subtitles during 2024.
And how that's continued.
Yeah, exactly.
Since. So, Alex, I hope that somehow answers your question.
Is that it? Do we get another question? Or is that...
Well, as is tradition, we just have one question. Right. This isn't the postbag. Yeah. I think you're getting confused.
One mystery question.
There's always one question.
Okay, that's fine.
There's always one mystery question. Sometimes it's a mystery,
sometimes it's not.
Let's not pretend if I send them in advance, you actually read the emails, James.
She makes a valid point.
Boyd always.
He does.
I totally do.
No, he does. It's you, I know, that I'm just sending it into like...
In fairness, I often read them, but then I just don't think about them and dismiss them from my mind. So it's not that I ignore them completely.
Yeah, I mean, it's all we can hope for. Onwards.
Onwards. All right, fine. Fuck it. We're done. That was the listener question. If you want to blink in your miss it mention on the Pilot TV podcast, do send them in.
Okay.
At Pilot TV Pod on Twitter, on Instagram, no, on Blue Sky, or indeed the Pilot TV subreddit.
I'm enjoying this.
Right. All I would say is the format is Kay reads out a question from a listener. We answer it. This is literally what's just happened. Yet somehow it didn't take the time that clearly James hasn't prepped anything else for the rest of the show and he wanted me to like.
I mean, look, we don't have an interview this week, so I'm just killing time.
Here we are. Now it's all coming out. Look, I think there will be some people who are relieved if this comes in under 3 hours.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a gift, isn't it? We're giving you some time back. Some of time of your day has been returned to you.
Yeah.
Because we'll have a slightly shorter podcast. So
you're welcome.
That's good. Right, should we move on then to news? And we begin with a moment of silence for the cancellation of Frasier.
Yeah. Boyd, how are you doing about, you know?
Relieved, be honest, delighted.
I'm never relieved or delighted at the cancellation of anything, even something I don't particularly
they
like.
They were pissing in the pool, boy.
Even though you kept on sticking the boot in.
Yeah, but I don't want to. There's jobs go when yes. people say that about magazines, oh, you know, or newspapers when they get axed. Like, you feel sorry for the people who work for them. I mean,
Of course. Like, yeah. We're certainly not celebrating the fact that people have to work.
I don't celebrate However, I think it's a perfectly understandable decision because I just don't think that the rebooted Frasier came anywhere near the brilliance of the original Frasier. Yep. And I think that's, I mean, I don't know what the figures are like. You never know with the streaming services, do you? Who knows what does well in there? But I think I feel partly possibly the reason why it was cancelled because they just realised it wasn't that great.
Yes, that seems likely, doesn't it? They watched it and went, oh, shit.
There were like a couple of episodes that worked really well. The one one of our listeners suggested I watched, which I did, and it was really good. The murder mystery evening party one was really good. But it was like, you know, out of like 20 episodes, it was like two or three that were worthy of OG Frasier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's gone. But that's not the only thing that has been axed this week.
Go on.
So also swinging the axe was Disney Plus, and they killed, first of all, Shard Lake is no more.
Yeah, that's a shame. I like Shard Lake.
Which one was that one again?
Shard Lake was the kind of period drama with the young guy who's investigating the death of, like, monks, and it was like, when was it set? I should know because I hosted a Q&A with the script writer.
Boyd is literally mates with Shard Lake and doesn't know.
Yeah, but it's a massively popular series of books.
Yeah, just not a massively popular series. Apparently.
No, it was quite a bold commission, I think.
It didn't have Sean Bean in it, did it?
Yeah, Sean Bean was in it, yeah. Anthony Boyle, Sean Bean.
Yeah, I enjoyed that first episode.
Ruby Ashburn, yeah, it was good. It was set in the Tudor era during the dissolution of the monasteries.
There you go.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Shard Lake is done, but that's not the only thing. Extraordinary was cancelled.
Oh, yeah.
I am not amused by that at all, because Extraordinary was great. I will say the second season maybe wasn't quite as good as the first, but it was still really watchable. I really enjoyed it, and I was fascinated to see where it went, because it ends on a kind of cliffhanger, certainly like a possibility, like you want to see where it goes. And I'm gutted. Hashtag justice for Jizzlord.
Yeah, that's a real shame.
I'm not happy. I'm not happy at all.
I don't remember finishing series two.
Well, that is your loss, boy.
Yeah, so that might be something to do with...
That's the reason why they cancelled it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I thought it was great. Really funny, really well acted, great characters.
Disney has released a first look at the new UK thriller, The Stolen Girl. Did you see it?
No,
it stars Amber Kamad. And
This is the one that used to be Playdate.
Yeah, it's from the producers.
Yes,
from
that's right.
It's from the producers of the Harlan Coben shows.
Interesting.
Yes, and this is what, like, the parents drop their kid off to someone's house for a playdate, and then when they come to pick them up, the house is empty, they're gone,
yeah.
Child's been abducted.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Exactly that. I mean, I was going to read the synopsis, but you've done
that's
a brilliant
it.
Job.
And Holiday Granger is the offending abductee.
Oh,
abductor.
Right, okay.
Abductor. Not abductee. She's not a child.
No.
But she's the abductor.
It's adapted by Catherine Moulton and it is, as you say, based on the novel Playdate by bestselling author Alex Dahl. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, it looks good. Looks also very stressful and terrifying.
Yeah, it's a good premise.
More good news. So, remember we reviewed High Potential with Caitlin Olsen?
Yes.
I enjoyed that. It was a bit ridiculous, of course, but it was entertaining. It's been commissioned for a second series.
A second round of episodic procedural episodes for James, my delectation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was fun. The cleaner who had a high IQ solved crimes.
Yeah.
It's not surprising that it's been renewed. It's not surprising that it's done well, because as far as I would say those kind of police procedurals go, this is one of the good ones, right? Like, because she's a really good character. It's quite fun. Also, remember, Castle was massively popular and isn't around anymore. And I do think it has that. Mm. It has a similar vibe to that.
Yeah.
Let me give you some stats. High Potential has been a breakout for ABC, ranking among the top first year series of 2024 to 25 so far, and drawing strong streaming numbers, blah, blah, blah. The first two episodes of the series averaged better than 10 million cross-platform viewers across 7 days.
I do love some sexy stats.
You've really statted us up there. Well, I have to start calling you Stato.
Stato?
In honour of Fantasy Football League, the classic...
Why Stato?
I'm telling you now, I'm explaining. Fantasy Football League, the classic TV show starring Badil and Skinner back in the day, was introduced by them, and they'd be a weekly look at football in a kind of a wryly funny way. And they had Stato, a guy whose nickname was Stato, who provided all the statistics about football. And it was a very famous thing for football fans and fans of Badil and Skinner back in the day.
Right. You learn something new every pod.
So Kay is the TV Stato.
Okay.
Now.
I'm happy about that.
Okay.
We're all ignoring the big news though. Come on.
Yes, Harlan Coben.
No. That's the second big... You've taken that hostage. That news.
Yeah. From Stato to Twato.
Yeah, oh, well... Very good.
I would allow that because that was good. Harlan Coben's new adaptation has been announced.
Has it?
Yeah.
And it stars, actually, Bear
Is this the one, just to derail us, is this the one that you and Harlan talked about while we were there? And
then, called Runaway.
But didn't he say to you that it had already been announced when you spoke about
it? Yeah, but not the cast.
Right.
Yeah. It had been announced they're doing it. That was the book. But the cast, and you clearly haven't even got the cast.
I have.
Because
James Nesbitt.
Who does it star?
Ruth Jones.
Ruth Jones.
Yes, Mini Driver.
Ruth Jones. Nessa herself, star and co-writer of Gavin and Stacey.
Studio stealer extraordinaire.
Exactly.
John Poynting from Big Boys.
Are all in Runaway, yes.
It's an eight-part series, and it follows Simon, played by Nesbitt, who seemingly had the perfect life, but then his eldest daughter, Paige, ran away and everything fell apart. When he finds her vulnerable and strung out on drugs in a city park, he finally has the chance to bring his little girl home. And, shockingly, no Richard Armitage.
I know, but James Nesbitt is kind of the new Richard Armitage. He was in the last one. He was in the last.
Don't tell Armitage that, Paul.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sure they'll be.
Nesbitt's good though.
Yeah. No. The news of the week, the big news of the week, is Hacks.
Yes.
Hacks has been acquired by Sky.
Mm-hmm.
It will start on Friday, the February of 7.
Okay.
Yeah. AKA Friday, 7th of February, 2025. They're going to start showing it on Sky Max live that night from season one. Season one and two were already on Prime Video, I think. But Sky have acquired the exclusive rights. And on that same day, it'll all be available as a box, including the most recent season 3 on Sky/Now demand.
Do you think someone at Sky was listening to the podcast and just thought, we need to do this because Boy keeps wanging on about
this
it. They're angry.
This is the power of the Pilot TV podcast.
We'll take the credit for it.
Absolutely no evidence for that whatsoever. But surely, to goodness, Sky were listening. They've got their finger out. They've acquired Hacks, so we won't have almost the best part of it is, I mean, I urge everyone to watch because it's a brilliant show. This is a show about a veteran kind of comedian played by Gene Smart, maybe a little bit kind of like Roseanne meets, I don't know, who was that veteran comedian whose name I've forgotten? Joan Rivers, thank you. But actually, kind of different to both of those. Mm. A brilliant creation. And she takes on a kind of indie comedy scriptwriter, young woman, and they work together to revitalize her career, and sparks fly, and it's a fantastic...
It's so
it's a
good.
Brilliant insight into kind of showbiz... Etc. So your Hacks, it's on Sky/Now from the 7th of February,
and so that was so we've that's the second biggest news, and this is the biggest news.
I think so.
Okay, and not for example that. Well,
here we go.
There were a few other bits. So Uma Thurman has joined the new Dexter TV series, which is Dexter, looks for the name of it, Dexter Resurrection, that's it.
Yeah, after the travesty of the Dexter.
But this follows on from New Blood, which was genuinely good. So I think we just pretend the prequel never existed.
All right.
Just
Dexter
disavow knowledge
Resurrection's quite a long title, isn't it?
I mean, it's
screen.
Two words.
No, but I mean, although... In terms of characters,
yes.
You...
Character count is slightly high. other exciting Incredible. News, my beloved Bosch, Titus Welliver, may be leading a spin-off of the Equalizer series.
Okay.
Not a lot of love for that.
No, I love Titus.
Well, yes. But the Equalizer is a massive hit, isn't it? That's
the Queen Latifah.
Queen Latifah
the
show.
Queen Latifah
I haven't checked, but it was like in the top two or three most popular scripted shows on American television.
Denzel is my show. Robert McCall. I won't be shifted.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I like those films, the Equalizer films, not as much as Chris Hewitt does, but I like.
No, hey, I watched the Equalizer on Christmas Eve. That was my Christmas
Did you?
Movie.
The first one.
Yeah, first one.
Have you seen it before?
I've seen it before, yeah. Right.
I thought you don't watch anything over Christmas.
Well, I don't watch anything on Christmas Day.
Oh,
this was Christmas Eve.
I stand corrected.
There you go. Yes, you do. Did you watch the trailer for Yellowjackets Season 3?
No, because you know how I feel about Yellowjackets.
I feel you should have watched it, because then we could have discussed whether or not it looks like a return to form.
They just made me so angry, Season 2.
So, Season 2 was not good. And I think part of the problem was is that the past sequence... was just relentlessly tedious. Whereas the present had at least some good stuff in it because they've obviously got good people and Christina Ricci is amazing. This trailer looks like more is going to happen. Like it feels like they've read the feedback cards and more looks like it's happening in the past sequences.
And I've seen articles, there's a thing in Vanity Fair about it, I think it was, where they're talking about we've also literally saying they've learned from
a recalibration.
Yeah. So I will give it a chance. But I believe screeners are already available to those of us in the elite world of TV reviewing.
I have not received Yellow Jacket screeners.
I have,
I suggest you are the canary.
What do you mean?
As in you watch it first and see whether...
We'll review it. We'll have to watch
it. Well, you remember last time on Pilot Plus, we did week-by-week spoilers until Kay lost the will to live.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Because it got bad.
It
lost me when it had more than one of those moments where there has an outlandish, ridiculous thing happen and it turns out to be in someone's imagination.
Yeah.
Oh, God, which happens a lot. In fact, it happens in a show we're doing this week.
Ella Purnell is in this. Ghost Jackie returns.
Yes,
we see her in the trailer.
Yeah. I did watch the trailer and I agree with you that it looks like a return to form.
It does.
It does. But
it's
a trailer. Trailers can, you know.
Trailers, by their very definition, are designed to make it look good. Yes, exactly.
It does its job. Yeah. But I have an open mind and I will be watching.
I have never been accused of that, but I will also be watching.
Oh, you have a closed mind.
Oh, my gosh. Hermetically sealed.
Yeah.
Watch any good sci-fi, Rishni K? Just throwing that out.
Yeah, I did actually.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I am now counting Severance as sci-fi.
Are you?
But crucially, Kay,
you're not watching Severance as we established on Pilot Plus when you refused to do the week by week spoiler specials.
But I watched the first episode.
You watched one episode. Yes. Oh, well done.
So you are
in many ways the martyr of our times.
He's on it today.
Do you know what? There's a fine line.
Yeah.
And I know he's trying to get me to swear.
Swear. Yeah. Do it.
I'm not doing it.
Do it.
I'm not doing it.
Does this personal swearing ban extend to like all walks of your life?
Or is it just on air?
I have cut down.
I told you,
I'm not saying...
You don't swear at your...
I'm determined to get you to tell me to fuck off before the end of this episode.
Fuck off, you see.
Yeah, that's it.
Can you imagine?
Go on.
That would be a real return.
I feel like Palpatine at the end of Return of the Jedi. I'm like, you want to swear at me? Strike me down with your...
Oh, my God. This is a great reference for Kay, by the way. Who's never seen
of course
Star Wars in her life.
Of course she hasn't.
You make it very hard for me,
even when we review them on the podcast.
I try.
Should the other big news of the week? Still haven't finished news. The White Lotus is renewed for season 4 before even season 3 goes out.
That's the way now.
Yeah, it is the way.
That's
a good little bit of publicity. Of course, HBO to announce this now, but it's officially been greenlit, season 4. It's unclear where the fourth season takes place or whether any cast members will return, but creator Sharon and Mike White, who remember, writes every single episode of the show on his own.
Mike
which
writes.
Totally, yes. Which totally...
Don't humour him, Boyd. Yeah. That was not good.
Which totally goes against the American TV writing system where everything's writing rooms and stuff. It's all, you know, he's pretty unique in that world.
Oh, he's not... Well, it happens. It's unusual, isn't it? unique, of course, being a binary term.
Oh, right.
Oh my God, I'm glad he's...
I knew he was going to...
You're me, right. Yeah.
Picking up on that today. Thank God for that.
Boyd is definitely going to tell me to fuck off before the end of this episode.
His territory knows no bounds today.
It is quite rare.
Thank you, I will allow it.
Well, I will allow.
Oh my God, it's back to judge, dictatorship. If you need an incentive to get Pilot Plus, please get it and then listen to yesterday's episode. Oh, that came out this morning where James was exposed as a dictator.
Oh, that's true.
Anyway, I was having a chat about this earlier in the office to some Grazia operatives, and we were talking about where we'd like it to be set the next season. And I think that's interesting. And one, someone suggested
Coventry.
What were you about to say?
Hello, okay. There's only one answer, especially if it involves a set visit for me or you.
Fiji!
Yes, Fiji. Fiji, of course.
Well, someone, I thought the boldest suggestion was like in snowy climes.
Like following on from A Murder at the End of the World?
Yeah. Well, and also following on from your trip to, the icy mountains. Where was it? You went?
Yeah, it was Switzerland.
Switzerland. Val d'Isère or somewhere.
I don't want snow.
It would give it a whole different tone, wouldn't it? Didn't feel if it was a snowy landscape.
If it ain't broke. Please give us sunny climes. It'll be interesting.
But the other funny thing about the news report is it says this sentence, that creator Mike White has already pitched ideas to Casey Bloys, the HBO and Max chief. I'm like, can you imagine? Like, if Mike White says, yeah, I'll do another series of The White Lotus, they're just going to be, oh, brilliant, thank you, do whatever the fuck you like. They're not going to nitpick.
Here's a blank check.
Can you imagine him going, I'm pitching this should be set in Sydney, Australia, and they go, no, we're not doing that. That's not going to happen, is it? He'll do what the fuck he wants.
Yeah. Anyway. Such is the power of M-dubs.
Yeah, M-dubs. That's still good news. And imminently, the new season, I think we're about 3 or 4 weeks away from the arrival of the new series of The White Lotus.
Cannot wait.
Cannot. Literally the most exciting TV show of the year, I think.
I mean...
I know, The Last of Us, all right, whatever.
Please don't start him up again.
No, it's a given. It's a given that James thinks The Last of Us.
Yeah. Do you know what? Maybe my challenge for this year should be to watch an episode or a series of The White Lotus, because I never finished series one or two.
What?
So, Sometimes I forget these things.
I didn't like it much, so I never watched it. Gosh. So maybe I should press on with
this one. It's painful, isn't it? Sometimes you forget that James... literally refuses to watch the best shows on TV. And it's painful, not only for me and us, and the but also for the listeners who pick you up on it regularly.
And you know what? I've had quite a few listeners saying about him watching, he should watch Shrinking. I'm like, listen, he's never going to do
it. It's on the sofa list.
But does The White Lotus even merit
it's a not on the
no.
sofa list.
It's too cringeworthy for you, that's why, isn't it?
A little bit.
Why? No. I don't think so. I think you should definitely...
We'll see. I'll begin season three with you guys to review it, and then we'll see if I will press on.
Again, of you.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah. So Netflix are putting their prices up, and that's caused some controversy. But in the US, so there are currently no plans to increase the UK price, so I guess no one in the UK really cares. But in America, they have whacked it up by $2.50.
An incentive to pay for Pilot Plus, where we review some of the Netflix shows we should do more of, and then you can just do that.
Yeah.
And that's like a month, isn't it? How much it costs? $350 or something? Like, you know, that's a per week, presumably, that your figure that you said.
Netflix will be monthly, won't it?
A month. But the interesting thing about the Netflix news that I saw that I was mentioning was that they put on like 10, 20 million new customers, new subscribers.
Yeah, they've had a pretty good
year. It's above 300 million. That is extraordinary, isn't it? Because people, at one point, I remember a couple of years ago, people were like, well, is it actually going to make money? Is this putting so much money into shows, billions and billions, and what are the economics of it? How can that possibly work? I think now they have proven that it's working pretty well for them.
Yeah.
It's actually put on those numbers in a quite a tough economy, you know, globally, and still people will sign up to your service to watch whatever, you know. Not chaos.
Not anymore.
That it shows that the model actually does still work. Because some people are saying, you know, lamenting the death, if you like, of streaming TV, and it's all, you know, it's all too much. But actually, Netflix itself, particularly the pioneer in this world, is still doing pretty brilliantly.
I mean, they are dominating the space, certainly. Yeah. But I think we've still moved on from that period where everyone had Netflix and then you might subscribe to another one too. I think now people do migrate between services.
Yeah, that's
but
a lot of that.
Netflix are prolific enough that, you know, it makes sense. Like with Apple TV Plus, well, they have, to my mind, the best stuff because they don't have that much of it. You could subscribe for a couple of months, binge through all of C, for example, and then you could unsubscribe for a few months, can't you? Whereas with Netflix, because they have so much coming, it makes sense to keep that subscription ongoing. So, you know, presumably part of their volume of output is to stop people from doing that.
You're right, yeah. I think that makes sense, yeah.
The other piece of news I would mention, which has nothing to do with Netflix, is that House of the Dragon will not be returning to our screens this year, which has caused a bit of an uproar. That said, it shouldn't be, I guess, massively surprising. They do not begin shooting the third season of House of the Dragon until March.
Gosh.
So it would be, I mean, given the amount of post-production and the effects work in that, I guess it was unlikely to turn up this year. But they're saying now it's looking at like mid-next year, so mid-26 for season 3 of House of the Dragon, which has disappointed me enormously, but as I say, not really surprised me. Kay, clearly devastated, so can't even speak.
Absolutely stunned. Lost for words. Yeah.
And Boydie, you like House of the Dragon, don't you? You're a big Dragon fan.
I am not surprised. Yeah, that's such a huge show. I mean, yeah. You know, it takes a long time to make these shows.
But they haven't thought I might want it.
Yeah, well.
And remember, it is James World and we're just living in it.
That's right. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
Is that for news? Are we done?
We're definitely done with news.
We shall move on now to this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have a two-part dramatization of the final television interview between journalist Brian Walden and outgoing Prime Minister Margaret Maggie Thatcher in 1989. This is directed by Stephen Frears. We didn't send Boydie along to interview him, as he already seemed quite well rested. But that doesn't mean... That means that we can turn to you, Boydie, and ask what you thought of it, because you are not compromised. So, do you remember the interview this was based on? Do you watch it when it aired?
I actually do, yeah.
I felt like you turned to him in the style of an interviewer.
Did
like,
I? Going,
you went, you know,
I
so.
Went full Walden.
Yeah.
Fine. Boydie, did Stephen Frears get his own back here and send you to sleep instead?
He didn't know. In case listeners don't know, what James was referring to with the Stephen Frears incident is that I interviewed him as part of a panel of BAFTA nominees at BAFTA HQ in Piccadilly years ago.
You gave him a Walden-esque grilling.
Exactly. And they're all on stage at the same time, which in retrospect could be considered to be slightly the flaw in the plan. And he was sat at the end on this kind of long, there's like four or five of them. They're all sat on this long sofa, like, you know, with a few feet between them. And he was at the end. And I was talking to the other, you know, interviewing the other contenders.
At length, presumably.
At some level, not that long. And I did notice at the corner of my eye that he kind of slumped rather in the corner. Yeah. He had
so
clearly
he actually fallen asleep.
So yeah, Boyd was like, he's either asleep or dead. And it's kind of unclear. Which.
Well, what I did was when I saw him fall asleep, and I thought, I don't want many people to notice because that clearly has. So I finished up interviewing whoever it was else I was interviewing. I went, Stephen! Like that, quite early. Well, he definitely bolted up.
Oh my God, you could have given a heart attack.
Yeah.
Well, at least it would have been temporarily.
Exactly. So, but funnily enough, I've met him a couple of times because I went on set of Quiz, which you also don't know, which has got a lot in common with this show, because that's also written by James Graham, who writes Sherwood. And James Graham, who you know, kind of half specializes now in dramatizing these big real life events and real life ideas. So, I saw Stephen Frears in action on that show. And I saw him direct something else as well a few years ago. So, and he's a brilliant. I mean, My Beautiful Laundrette years ago. You know, it was an incredible piece of work, one of his earlier films. So I have nothing against him. The fact that he fell asleep in my BAFTA Q&A, and he's done a really good job, I have to say. And he's well in his 80s now, I think. Frears. I remember Brian Walden as a big figure on TV, and I was probably like 10, maybe 11, 12 when this was happening. When he was very famous, and he did the show Weekend World that included these interviews. There's a bit in the first episode of this where they play the theme tune. He's waiting to interview Maggie and he's there for cameras on him, and they play the theme tune. The theme tune is whack. It's like the theme tune to a thriller. It really is. When you watch this, I urge people to like just close their eyes for a minute when the theme tune comes on. It's so funny. It's like massively melodramatic. It's like strings and synthesizer, and then it builds to a massive climax, and it goes bang, and then he goes, "Hi, I'm Brian Walden." But the thing about Brian Walden, that almost this show, this two-part drama, it's based on and / inspired by a book by Rob Burley, who's Kay Burley's son, by the way, Kay Burley off Sky's son, who's a politics TV producer. And he wrote this book called Why Is This Lying Bastard Lying to Me? And it's all about the whole...
Great title.
Yeah, great title, The History of Political Interviews. So the book is a general run-through of all political interviews, and he himself suggested, Rob Burley, to Steve Coogan, that he should make a show particularly about the history of Brian Warden's interviews with Margaret Thatcher, and that Coogan could do it because he's such a brilliant impersonator and he is so good at getting Brian Warden's voice. That was the thing I remember when everything. He's got this really weird, he's got the slight kind of, you know,
it's Midlands accent, Midlands, but also that his R's.
The R's, yeah. Exactly. A bit Jonathan Rossi with his R's, so to speak. And just his whole delivery was weird.
Yeah.
And I remember that more than anything. I remember his delivery being weird and the theme tune more than the actual interviews, but I still don't owe you it when you watch the. And this whole thing, a bit like Frost Nixon, it really, I mean, people are going to compare it lazily to Frost Nixon, as I am doing
as you
right
just
now.
Did, yes.
But it's all about a series of interviews, and they become kind of friends, basically. And part of it is about, I think, A, the art of political interviewing and how it's changed, and how in this world they'd have one person interviewed for an hour on TV, and you just imagine that now, like politicians submitting themselves on their own for an hour. You might get it during election time, but you probably don't even then. So it's quite a different world.
Well, it begins with title cards kind of like pointing out the sort of lack of accountability of modern political figures.
So it's making that point. That's part of it. I think it's also about kind of how the ethics, if you like, of a journalist, an interviewer, becoming friendly with the person they are interviewing. Now, I
was going to say,
to be self-aware for 1 minute, when you do host as many events as you and I do, Kay, in the world, you do get to know some of these people, actors and writers and people who become quite friendly. Like, you know, we've got friends of the podcast.
It's true.
You know,
that's true.
Stetcher, for example.
Yeah, James, what he's saying is you're not immune from this.
Yeah, exactly. You're not so immune from it. But the difference is, and I acknowledge that, and it is... But if I was writing, you know, I think we tried to, if I wanted to, if I saw something I didn't like, I always say this, by someone that I consider to be a friend or an acquaintance, someone I knew in the business, I'd just ignore it and avoid it. I wouldn't, you know.
Also, you're not doing investigative journalism,
well, this is
right?
The other thing.
Or political journalism.
Also, I should point out, like, we try very much to separate. Like, there's a reason why you didn't lead the review on Prime Target.
Exactly.
Like,
and I admit it. I'm transparent. I admit it. If I've done loads of things with the star of a show, I admit it.
Yeah.
Anyway, but as you're alluding to, I think it is different when it's a politician. And there's a very interesting moment when Thatcher and Hip and Brian Warden have a little drinky together. And he says to her, can you not tell anyone about this? I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, so he recognises.
Yeah, he knows the danger, really. And what he brought back to me was, Brian Warden was a really unusual interview because he does his job. He actually does ask the questions you want asking, but he does it in such a way that it sounds like he's kind of being friendly with them. This is my memory of him, really, and that this, I think, brilliantly captured, that he's kind of like slyly doing a really good job. But I think his colleagues, interestingly, don't get what he's doing. And they're quite annoyed with him. They think he's being too soft on Thatcher.
Mm.
But actually, he does ask the question as well. It's just he does it in a certain way that feels soft.
Well, you feel like he doesn't... It's the follow-ups he lacks. He doesn't hold her feet to fire. He'll ask a question, she will answer it, and he lets the answer stand.
Completely, yeah.
But and, I think we haven't said that he started off being a... He was an MP,
it was a Labour,
right?
Yeah, it was a Labour MP.
So that's the whole point that you make, is that he was an MP, he became an interviewer, and because of his background, he often didn't have that killer instinct, because the MPs generally just wanted to be lights, and that was part of his
personality. Well, I think he did have more of a killer instinct. This is partly about did or didn't he? You know, he didn't have you compare him to Robin Day, was the other big interviewer of this era, who was really aggressive often. Like, he was the paxman. He was more of the paxman, and I think Brian Warden was more like the Jonathan Dimbleby. I'm making all these references. If you're under the age of 50, you won't know what the fuck I'm talking about. But that was I have very specific, you know, that ideas of, but what this really does, for me, fascinatingly explores is, well, you know, there are subtleties to the art of political interviewing, and it all ended up, and of course it all builds up to the fact that Thatcher thought he was a friend and you know, thought she was going to get away with being interviewed in some way by him. And in the end, he does produce the goods, which is, it's all about kind of the history of what happens.
That final interview just before she steps down.
Before she steps down, yeah. But what I haven't said, of course, is Harriet Walter plays Margaret Thatcher. Harriet Walter of a Succession fame. Remember, she was the mum of the family. She was fantastic in Succession. She's been in a lot of stuff. Now, initially, I don't know about what I was going to ask you, what you two think. Initially, I thought she wasn't being Thatchery enough for me. Like, if you compare, Gillian Anderson did Thatcher in The Crown, and I thought she was brilliant. Almost like after about a minute, you forgot that it was her. She was an actress playing Thatcher. For me, she was so good. She captured Thatcher so well. It was like you were watching her in the context of going to where they went to in that Scottish castle in The Crown. Whereas this, I felt I was watching Harriet Walter to start with, and then suddenly, at one point, I think like almost towards the end of the first episode, maybe in the scene, in fact, where she's has the drinks with him, she was more Thatchery. And I was like, oh, okay.
Maybe that was intentional.
And it might have been intentional.
Because at first, they were both green, right, in their positions. Yep. She was just like, she wasn't the prime minister then. And when he first interviewed her, and the whole point is that he got in really early with forming a relationship with her.
Yeah. And also, I think there's also a sense that she did famously have like elocution lessons and lessons in how to speak and present herself. And I think as time wore on, she became more of the Maggie Thatcher that everyone remembers.
And you see that even with between the first interview and the second, like she starts off being like, as I said, very green, and then by the second interview, she's got cue cards, she's got someone briefing her on what she should say and stuff like that. It just shows the natural progression of both of them.
I agree, yeah. But he's brilliant as Brian Warden, Coogan. I mean, Coogan, he's really specialising in real life figures now, because he did Jimmy Savile most recently, he did Martin Sixsmith in Philomena, he did Stan Laurel, he is incredible.
Can we talk about what a phenomenal actor Steve Coogan is? Because I still think like a lot of people just see him as Alan Partridge.
He's incredible.
He's so good. He's an extraordinary mimic and just an incredible actor.
Exactly. So this show for me is like catnip for me, because I grew up watching this stuff. I remember these people. It's kind of partly reminding people of what Thatcher was like. I think she's treated fairly in this. For many people of my political persuasion, she's a monster, basically. But I think they do well in humanising her, but not in a bland kind of like we're showing the good side of Thatcher because you all hate her. It's more subtle than that. And I think James Graham, as you'd expect, he's one of the best writers out there, does a fantastic job of kind of digging into this whole relationship. It feel like when it was first announced, I was like, is that really that interesting and important a thing? Do you know what I mean? You get like, because when you told that he's going to do a drama based on the Who Wants to be a Millionaire scandal, like, oh, amazing, you know. When you hear a drama's going to be made about the post office scandal, you think, this one, I was like, I'm not sure if there's going to be enough. But it is, I think it's good that it's only a two-parter, and I've watched the whole thing, and it really works within that, the confines of the two episodes. So I loved it. I don't know how much of a wide appeal it could have to younger viewers, but
I think it's particularly of interest to people in the media. For example, for me, right, I didn't know anything about him. So then I instantly was Googling, and I find it fascinating from the point of view that the interview process, as interviewers, that's very interesting. And as you say, the moral questions it raises about, political journalists interviewing politicians and the bonds they form, etc. I thought it was really interesting, because I didn't know a lot about this whole, both him and also this time, I have to say, because I was born in 80. So, and I thought it was really interesting the fact that they bond. So first of all, how he got into it, the fact that he was an MP and then went in to become an interviewer. There's this feeling for me that he didn't want to be combative, but there's a line in it. He says that he wanted to facilitate mass comprehension. And I actually really liked that, because I thought, that is probably what he's trying to do. Yet whereas other politicians might have instantly taken against her, they actually bonded over the fact that, in her words, they're both good examples of the meritocracy, got to the top against all the odds. And you can see why they would bond. They were like, they both went to Oxford on scholarship, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so
that was really interesting.
Sort of working class Midlands backgrounds.
Yeah, the aspirational working classes.
Yeah. But what's also interesting, though, is like, and he makes this point that they were like, you didn't have a go. He's like, she answered the question. Like, what do you want from me? She answered the question in full. And it's almost like they wanted him to be argumentative for the sake of it. Whereas I think nowadays when politicians are interviewed, the problem is they don't answer the question. They dodge, they dive, they duck, they walk out, they do whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, they often just don't answer the question. Yeah. And for all of her faults, and she has many, she's quite frank and forthright straight-talking in these interviews, which
I think
is quite
interesting. That's what blindsides them, right? Because they don't expect her to. Mm. And then when she does, and he doesn't ask the follow-up questions.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting because she she not only does she answer the question, she doesn't soft soap her answer as well. No. So her answer will be, "If do you think this is going to be ending, you know, more people being unemployed?" She's like, "Yes, I do."
Yes.
And that's like, just the price we have to pay.
She doesn't flinch.
Yeah. She's
nowadays, they'd be like, yeah. "Well, Brian, I mean, that's not really the question,
exactly,
is it?" And they just dodge it.
And actually, what's really good about this, I liked, is that they show clips of real news footage, right?
Yeah.
Of Boris,
yeah.
And I'm keeping saying right. David Cameron and, like, you know, Tony Blair. So you see how they deal with it compared to her.
Super slick media training. But I mean, I'd be fascinated to know, like, what was there even proper media training? Like, what did media training look like in the 80s?
There wasn't any, was there?
I think there was. I remember at the time, particularly with her, I think I think she did get training. She did, yeah. I mean, not right at the beginning, by the way. So,
yeah.
But I think as time went on, and
she became Prime Minister.
Yeah, I think she did get some pretty much media training. And there's an episode of Yes Minister in which he gets media training when he comes Prime Minister, yes, Prime Minister, which is in a similar period. So, yeah, I think it did happen. But obviously now it's gone completely.
Well, now they're often just taught not to accept the premise of the question,
yeah,
and to kind of redirect
just
it.
Just say what you like. Now, basically, they're told to say what you want to say, fuck
yeah,
the question.
It doesn't matter what the question
ignore
is.
Ignore the interviewer.
Relax, exactly, your stump speech, just
say
be
your
done
thing.
With it.
And it's so painful. I mean, you think we're bad. I mean, if you watch American political issues, yeah, they are unreal. It's considered, and this is even pre-Trump, I would say, in America, it's considered rude for interviewers to really probe a subject, and if the subject of the interview doesn't want to be probed, so to speak, it's considered rude if you carry on asking them. Honestly, it's
finding
weird.
That balance, though, isn't it? Because otherwise, you get what we have here sometimes, which I think it's too combative, so that they don't even get a chance. Sometimes,
yeah,
it becomes a bit, for example, Piers. Right, where it becomes more about the interviewer.
But
than
but that's a different type of interview, isn't it? Like, he's a professional bellend. That's his whole persona.
Yeah.
Like, but it is. Like, that's, he sets himself up in that way.
And you know, I'm reluctant to say, I mean, this is a whole discussion, but he's very different when he's interviewing, say, Donald Trump, which is his Donald Trump interviews from during the first presidency were embarrassing.
Yeah.
But actually, I think his interviews now, by and large, I think he actually is really good. And I hate to say it,
oh,
I can't
really
stand him. Yeah, I think his interviews are pretty
good. I haven't
now
seen him.
He did a lot. He did a lot of interviews during the Gaza conflict with Israelis and Palestinians, and he was, I have to say, he was really good. He was very even-handed. He would ask stuff of the Israeli people representatives that you would not see on BBC and ITV. I think they'd be too scared to do so. So I think, as I say, I can't stand him. But he unfollowed me because I signed years ago.
Is it because you turned down the GB News spot that they offered you?
GB News, yeah. But he's now just online. He's basically, he's not even, you know.
He's gone renegade.
Like Alex Jones.
Exactly. So yeah, but yeah, he's a... It's a whole fascinating world.
Alex Jones, not the one show presenter, would you say?
Also a professional interviewer, though, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really liked it. It's only two parts as well, which is quite refreshing in this day and age.
Yeah.
Very manageable.
Yeah, it's very manageable. I think, you know, you're right, who is this for? But equally, I think it walks a very interesting line because it sets itself up as kind of a critique on the lack of accountability for modern politicians. So it's like, okay, well, that's kind of a fairly universal thing. And she's an incredibly polarizing figure.
Yeah.
But it doesn't demonize her. Like, it actually, it puts across, like, she comes across as very reasonable in a lot of these early interviews as well. And because she's quite frank and she's quite straight talking, it's quite disarming because, again, we're not used to it. But equally, it's set at the crisis point of her sort of tenure as prime minister where she's just fucked. She's fucked
yes,
and she has fucked up and she's done and John Major is about to take over.
Yeah.
So for those with a little bit of schadenfreude, you know, you've got that. But also for those who might be in the Maggie Camp, you know, it actually portrays her in a very interesting light. So actually, it does quite a clever political tightrope walk,
yeah,
I think. It's
we
well calibrated.
We should say also the look is really, the look and feel, it's very authentic, isn't it, to that time? I really like that.
Yeah.
All the colour palettes, even the logo, I forgot about, you know,
LWT. Oh my God,
it came
yes.
On the screen, I was like, oh my God, I remember this.
Yeah, there's some lovely little, like technical, how TV was made at the time when she gets
yeah,
into
the perspective.
The perspective thing.
And he was like,
really
oh, they're
going
to do some funky thing for the titles.
Yeah, and the other thing I kept thinking was he was really nice. Like, I don't, do you know what I mean? Like Brian Warden, like he was genuinely
kind
of
yes,
kind. He was good with his colleagues, and you know that he's died years ago. They don't have to portray him in that way.
Yeah,
but he really comes across as a good guy.
And to that point, there's a bit where his producer's giving him loads of shit for not being a good interviewer, and he was like, "Well, then teach me." It's like, "I'm not a journalist.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want me to do it differently, I'll learn. Like, tell me what
and
you want me to do."
As they approached him, it wasn't his idea.
Yeah,
they approached him to become.
It always felt like he was in service to the public. which I liked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I think he was very aware that he was in murky ethical waters when, yes. for example, like Team Thatcher called him up at midnight and said, can you come over and help Maggie with a speech? And he's like, okay, if you don't tell anyone.
Like,
you knew. But there was, you know, of course it's ego, isn't it? You know, like the corridors of power. Mm. Like he, the prime minister was essentially asking him, was she prime minister at that point?
Yeah, she was.
She was asking him to come and do, and he, you know, couldn't say no, really, could he? He felt flattered, you know, he wanted to do it. And he gives her incredibly straightforward, you know, direct advice. So I think there is an element of maybe it's, it gave me the impression that he was telling her a little bit what she wanted to hear. But
Do you know what I thought was really interesting? The fact that he came up with expressions that then she used in her campaigns, you know, like the Victorian values.
Yeah, that was interesting.
And they say that to him, don't they? So you've basically fed her that. She's going to trot that out. And he goes, yes, you know, we're shaping the discussion, not just reporting it.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting kind of, first of all, slice of British political history, but also just a great portrayal and a showcase for old Steve Coogan, who is fabulous.
Mm, fantastic.
Less of the old.
Sorry, for the very youthful Steve Coogan. That's Brian and Maggie, and that's on Channel 4. When, Boydie?
Wednesday the 29th and Thursday the 30th of January, 9 p.m, 2025.
Next up, we have Paradise, which reunites Sterling K. Brown with This Is Us showrunner Dan Fogelman and sees Brown as a Secret Service agent on the president's protection detail who turns up at work to discover that his protectee has not been sufficiently protected, leading to a hunt for the perpetrator within an exclusive idyllic community populated by very, very powerful people. Now, this is a show that's going to be quite challenging to talk about because the wider details of this show are a spoiler and are kind of only revealed sort of a ways into the story. And I double-checked online and looked at the trailers, and Disney have been quite circumspect as to how they frame the show, and they've not given it away. So we're not going to here. We are going to only give away stuff that is, for example, in the trailer. So we will not be spoiling this show. If you're worried about that, don't worry about it. I do recommend that if you want to watch this show, you maybe avoid reviews, because I'm absolutely certain some of the reviews will spoil this. I don't know that for a fact because they're not out yet. The embargo hasn't lifted, but I'm fairly certain they will. So just, you know, I'm going to say be careful. So we will tread very carefully around it. Kay, you can navigate this particular minefield for us. So yes. If you are about to blurt out a spoiler, think twice, because it's another day for you and me in paradise.
That would be good if the president didn't do that joke in the actual show.
It is true. Right? There is an unexpected amount of Phil Collins in the show.
And like, I'm happy about that.
Yeah, don't say it like it's a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm very happy about that. Yeah. Do you know what's really funny? On the way here, I had Coldplay's song in my head and I wondered why, and it's because of this title, Paradise.
That's right. There's also a lot of Tiffany in this show as well. So
again, not a bad thing.
Yeah, they mentioned it, but there are kind of like emo covers of a lot of these songs in there. So Phil's Another Day in Paradise, Tiffany's I Think We're Alone Now. Like you have these slightly sort of slowed down and sort of like thoughtful covers of them in there. And there are two others, and I've written them down and I forgot to bring them with me. But yes, a few of those.
Two words, gourmet burger. Okay. I really enjoyed this. So Sterling K. Brown, as you say, plays Xavier Collins, and he is the first agent protection officer of the president, Cal Bradford, played by James Marsden. Now, this isn't the spoiler to say that within minutes you query the claim that he's the best in the world when we find the president has been shot. Devastating for me.
You had one job, Xavier. One job.
Exactly. Devastating for me because I'm a James Marsden fan. But we see that him discovering the body, and then he has a 30-minute head start because he wants to get ahead of the investigation, figure out what has happened before he has to call it in. And then through flashbacks, we learn about Xavier and Cal, their respective lives, their relationship.
A very complicated relationship.
Yeah, it was. It's lavish, it's well constructed. I lapped it up. I didn't even mind the flashbacks because, you know, sometimes it's an overused device.
Yeah.
But I think they served the purpose in terms of, you know, explaining how this relationship developed, this working relationship. And I found the characters really interesting. So the president is straight talking. He's a second term president who really, I mean, should he be president? Probably not. But his reasoning is like, yeah, sure, I can't pinpoint Syria on the map, but I'm a decent, honest guy who will generally try and do the best thing, you know, possible. And in this world, that's all we can hope for. And then you've got Xavier, who is a decent family man. He's very dedicated to his family, but also to his job. And then there's this element of the story that I just didn't see coming, which ordinarily I would be like, in uproar, just being like, oh, for God's sake, why? But I think...
In that voice?
Yeah, probably.
Literally, that is that voice.
That's exactly my voice when I'm not here in the studio. Mm. This is my studio voice at home. I sound like that. yeah, it's something I'd usually balk at, but because I was so invested in the characters, I just went with it. I thought it was very interesting because actually it's what makes it different from any other sort of president, protection officer kind of drama that you would see. It's the thing that makes this more interesting, and I welcomed it, which you wouldn't think I would. I doubt you'd probably think I would. But I went with it and I saw it as a good point of difference, and I've watched, because I ran out of time, but I watched two episodes and I will watch more. And it's got the similar feeling to it, I think, as Hijack, where it's that gourmet burger for me. Where I'm like, yes, I want to dine. I want to feast on this.
Mm. It's hard to talk about, as you've alluded to, because it is very much. If you watched This Is Us, which remember it started out like Channel 4 started showing it, I'm pretty sure, at the beginning, and then I think ratings dropped off, and then I think it moved to E4, and then it like almost like moved to Channel 4 Online or something. It's kind of like their interest in it seemed to kind of like wither away, but I think it maintained its popularity in America. It's like a huge, huge show in America, This Is Us. It went on for 6 seasons and 106 episodes. You know, sometimes you check, I was like, fuck, that's a huge thing. And it was a massive hit for Dan Fogelman, the creator. And if you ever watched it, because the whole structure of This Is Us, what made it its USP was that it showed you the flashbacks to all the characters' lives before they became who they are in the present day, and he would weave in.
This is the one, the adopted. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, but that was the thing. It incorporated time jumps and different timelines. You'd have 3 timelines into its whole thing. So the whole thing was really built on narrative trickery or narrative timey-wimey moving stuff around type thing. withholding certain bits of information that you then find out later via a flashback or something like that. But it was also very emotional and very, it was all about, you know, people living at the extremes of, you know, of success. There's, you know, people, there's actors and people living in LA, and there's people who are, you know, almost homeless, and there's, it kind of, his shtick, I think, Dan Fogelman, is emotion-based drama, you know.
Emotional roller coaster.
So this has that element to it for sure, and it does incorporate flashbacks indeed into its structure in a very similar way. But there's this whole other thing going on that makes it different, and that is, I think, a really. It's almost like I thought Dan Fogelman going, "Oh, why? Well, you know, I could do this thing, and people won't be expecting that thing," and that's what makes it so unique. So quite unique, no, but it makes it
unique,
fairly rare,
or fairly rare
in the world of TV.
This is the thing that comes out of the podcast. Boyd getting to grips with that.
Yeah, it is very entertaining and enjoyable. Utterly preposterous, I think, massively ludicrous, but still. Very entertaining.
I mean,
gripping, you want to know how it's all going to play out.
Yeah,
you want to chow down on this gourmet chicken burger.
Yes, it's vegetarian gourmet chicken burger.
Yeah, for sure.
You say preposterous, though, but do you remember when Trump came around the first time around and things like House of Cards and Veep basically just died because they were like, this is,
yes.
I mean,
yes,
because reality has taken over fantasy. I kind of feel that a show where a puppet president is being manipulated by billionaire tech barons is maybe a million miles away.
It's not that element that's preposterous. That element is fine. It's the other elements.
Yes, I know exactly where you're going from. So I watched 7 of the 8 episodes, and only because they wouldn't give me the finale, which I haven't seen.
I just burned
through this on the weekend because it's incredibly addictive, and I just had to see what happened. And I should qualify this saying, I don't think this is like a bang, sort of nailed on classic. I don't. I think I'm going to review this for Empire. I have yet to decide what I'm giving it, though. I think I know what I'm giving it. I'm not going to say in case I change my mind, but.
In case it's a classic
good,
Felipe Flop.
It's good, yeah, it's a good little chat with himself there as well. Yeah. Should I give it that?
I think it's really interesting and compelling, and the mystery is there. Like, I don't think it's like, it's not like top tier A grade entertainment by any stretch of the imagination, but I really enjoy it. I think Sterling K. Brown grounds this show a little bit. He has a gravitas to him, which I think really works. Like, that's a really good bit of casting, because I think you could have gone a different way with that character, and then the show just becomes a little bit daft and you don't really enjoy it. But I think he has a real quality. You take him very seriously.
Even in This Is Us.
Yeah. Mm. Like he's got a real weight to his performance as well. And I thought that was great. I really enjoyed James Marsden as well. Obviously he dies at the very beginning of the show, but he's alive and well in the flashbacks. And I think as we fill out the human drama of this, the emotional drama, like what we learn about Xavier's past.
What are you laughing at?
I was laughing at the way he's gesticulating.
I'm gesticulating wildly.
He gets like that when he's excited.
Yeah,
he starts flapping his arms.
Oh, fingers are going now.
Fingers are go-go. Yeah. Yes. So he's lost his wife. He's raising two children alone. He's got like a best friend. And then you're sort of like questioning his friendship and all these different characters.
By the way, that's got a great example of, remember what I talked about last week? Making breakfast with the kids scene?
Oh, yeah.
Classic example of the genre.
Classic kids breakfast.
What, around the island?
Yeah.
Always around an island.
They've all got nice houses here.
Yeah.
They're great houses. But there is an element of, like, each week it's like, ooh, could it be this person? Ooh, could it be this person? Is this person a bit dodge? Ooh, they're a wrong one. Like, there's a lot of that to it. And sometimes it's a little bit, like, yanks you back and forth.
It's manipulative. It's very manipulative.
It's a cheeky yanker.
In the end, with This Is Us, I think people did get tired of it because it was so relentlessly manipulative.
Yes. And this also is quite yanky.
He did a terrible film, didn't he? I'm just remembering as well, Dan Fogelman. Do you remember in the middle of This Is Us, he brought a film out which he wrote and directed that was, everyone was like, oh my god, This Is Us works as an American mainstream primetime TV show, but this film is what is completely cuckoo bong.
I remember that.
If I could find the name of it, I would. Carry on, James.
Okay. Well, hang on. Are you referring to the...
It's a Boogle.
I'm not going to say, because I think I know what he's referring to. But Julianne Nicholson plays the kind of the big billionaire in this.
Yes.
I have questions about the finances. There's a bit where she talks about how her startup is floating. I can't remember what episode this is in.
Is it not in two? It must be third.
Well, it's a flashback. It's a flashback moment where she talks about...
I remember that, yeah.
She talks about her startup is floating, and she says she's about to be like the richest woman in the world. She's going to get $36 billion. I'm like, I'm sorry, what is your startup that you personally are getting $36 billion? And she's like, oh, it's cloud storage. Not being funny, the fucking CEO of Dropbox is probably not worth $36 billion.
Initially she goes like $17 billion, then she's actually 36.
And you're just like, what the fuck are you getting $36 billion for a cloud storage startup? I mean, that's just mental.
I mean, there are bigger things to get caught up on.
That's the thing that really bothered me.
No, but that was of interest. The film I'm referring to is Life Itself, which came out in 2018, written at co-producer by Dan Fogelman. It starred Oscar Isaac, Olivia Wilde, Mandy Patinkin, Olivia Cooke, etc. And on, I'm just looking at it now, on the critical results on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got 13%, with an average rating of 3.7 out of 10. It was slated.
Ooh.
Absolutely slated.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
Well, never mind. He coined it in with This Is Us.
Yeah, he did right in the end.
Yeah.
Probably 37
but I agree with you. There are moments where it's stretching the bounds. But I think there are lots of little off-kilter things going on as well, aren't there, which kind of like allude to that there's like a puzzle going on, you know, behind the scenes.
There's a lot of what's going on-ness to it. And there are actually quite a few different puzzles. So there's the fundamental whodunit, and then there's a lot more going on that you want to find out. But there is a gourmet burger aspect to this. Like, I think it's one of those things, like Hijack, you're like, I know I'm not watching high art, but I'm really enjoying myself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it's fine. Like, I mean, would I give it a 4? Probably not.
I thought you said you were going to not say.
I'm still not sure. I'm leaning towards a 3.
3 and 4.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards a 3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'd give it 4.
Yeah, but I'm sure you would, buddy. But
do you know what that was? An unprecedented attack. I was witness to that. I did not like it.
I'm not surprised.
I was going to be a human shield for you then, Boyd, but I didn't see it coming.
This is from the magazine.
That gave a complete unknown 3 stars. That's right. That's right. Yeah, we will soon be giving this 3 stars as well. So it's basically what I'm saying is on a par with a complete unknown.
Yes, oh my God.
That's good.
Ridiculous. Well, this is not 2 stars like Prime Target got as well.
No, it's not. That was harsh. Target was loads of fun.
Yeah. Prime Target's a gourmet burger, so in my opinion.
Yeah, and they both have that very Moorish quality to them. Yeah. So, yeah, I've enjoyed it. In fact, when it was on Saturday night, I started watching this, and it was a question of, am I going to watch this, or am I going to watch Prime Target? And I was going,
To be fair,
I say night, it was like early evening.
But anyway, it's either this or The Weakest Link.
It was, or Emmerdale, yes.
Emmerdale. No.
Oh, my God.
I chose to watch Paradise, and I then can stop, so... Yeah, cool. Paradise
keep,
then.
Keep us posted I'll on keep, the rating.
It's a big week, though, isn't it, for Paradise Cake? Because I have to mention, Death in Paradise is back. And you, of course, written the cover feature for a very famous magazine about it.
I did, yes. Yeah. It is a big week for Paradise. I would recommend both shows.
Death in and Just Paradise.
Mm-hmm. Which was Beyond? After Death?
Yeah. We should say this isn't part of the actual BBC Paradise universe.
No, it's
that's
not.
That's a different world.
The Paradise Cinematic Universe. Yeah. That's a separate endeavor. Yeah,
the budget for this one is far bigger.
Yeah.
That's true. That is true.
Paradise then. Disney Plus. When, Boydie?
Tuesday. Unusually, I think. Because you know, this stuff's usually on a Wednesday. Tuesday, the 28th of January, 2025. And they're cunningly, rightly, bringing out three episodes together on that first.
Yeah,
then it's one a week. Yeah, because you've got to get past episode one.
You need to immerse people in the concept, yes.
Yes, there you go.
Very good. We'll talk a bit more about this maybe in upcoming weeks you know. When people have seen some of it.
We could do spoiler specials on this. We could do spoiler specials on Severance. There's a whole array of things.
Wait, is this on the weekly, did you say? You're releasing two and then...
Three, and then weekly after that.
Oh, so we could do a weekly.
I think there's eight episodes in all, I think.
There are indeed eight.
I've seen seven,
there are eight. I've not seen the finale.
So does that mean we can't do it on the weekly because you've chosen to binge it again?
Honestly, at this point, if you're prepared to watch it, we can do it.
We could do it on the weekly.
What's funny about this? No one, if anyone hasn't listened to Pilot Plus, you just sound like a gigantic.
Because of the whole Only Murders situation.
Yeah, and also they don't know what you're referring to.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah. All right, we have one more show this week. And finally, we're here to talk about Mythic Quest. Ooh. This is the fourth season in this Apple comedy from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia's Rob McElhenney, Charlie Day, and Megan Gans. There is a spin-off show of this coming, I think, in March called Mere Mortals. But let's not concern ourselves with that just yet. And let's talk about season four of the main show. Now, if you've never seen it, this is a workplace comedy set at the offices of a game developer behind hit MMO Mythic Quest, which is essentially
an MMO, Daddy?
Well, an MMORPG, to be precise. Right. A massively multiplayer online role-playing game. So this is what you thought I was talking about when I mentioned D&D. Yeah.
So it's basically what you're up to at the weekends.
Yes, it's basically a fictionalized World of Warcraft, is what it is.
Fine.
We turn to our very own level 60 Night Elf Warlock, Boyd Hilton.
Thank you. I have mixed feelings about Mythic Quest. I think it falls between two stools, which is the kind of hyper-realistic workplace comedy like The Office, mm-hmm. and I include the US and UK versions in that, and the much broader kind of sitcom thing you might get with an audience, you know, kind of a Friends or a Seinfeld. And from the start, I remember thinking, this show doesn't know which one it wants to be. And it's really still the case. As I haven't watched it since, I think we reviewed series one or two, I can't remember, maybe both. There's been a bit of a gap between this fourth season and the previous one. And so you can happily tune in and not get the gist of what it's all about. You don't have to have seen all the previous episodes or anything. It's not like an ongoing mystery like the Gourmet Burger we just reviewed. You'll get the hang of it, what it's about and the characters and everything. But it's a bit too shticky. It's a bit too... Everyone's acting in that way that everyone has done since The Office, since the UK Office, since Ricky Gervais, you know, did it with David Brent. And in that kind of like... As if there's a documentary being made about this world, but there isn't. It's heightened. Mm. Yeah, exactly. But they think they're being realistic, and the way it's shot and everything, it's like a single camera. It's not filmed in front of an audience or anything like that. So it's shot as if it's like quite nicely. It's quite, you know, decent Apple TV Plus budget and everything with effects and this and that and the other. And I think they all feel they're acting naturally, but I think they're not. And it's all a little bit too much for this, what the kind of genre they're going for, I think, personally. Even compare it to like Modern Family, for example. Modern Family is a faux documentary. Mm-hmm. And so it gets away with a lot of its slightly broader moments. In this, like, there's a moment where someone snatches an award from someone else and they go, you can't just pull. And you're like, that wouldn't happen. It's just a tiny little moments like that that took me out of it.
I've seen you snatch a magazine out of my hands.
Well, really? Okay, maybe. But it didn't ring true. None of it rings true for me.
Yeah.
So I quite. I remember the thing. It's a good idea. Why not? Of course, you would set a workplace in this day and age, in this kind of world of video games and tech and all this, and they bring in, virtual reality and blah, blah, blah. And the interrelationships are quite funny. And Rob McElhenney is an inherently funny guy. He's got funny bones. And most of the cast are kind of, should be good. But I think the script and the dialogue and the way it's done isn't quite as naturalistic as it needs to be for what it's trying to do, if you see what I mean. So I don't particularly, I would only ever watch it when we're reviewing it for this show. So this must be the second or third time we've covered it. And basically, because by the way, there's nothing else on that is not embargoed, so we did resort to this, let's be honest. But he's a huge star, having been in Welcome to Wrexham, for example. Mm-hmm. I'd rather watch him in Welcome to Wrexham in a million years than watch him in this, is what I'd say. And I'm being exaggerating slightly, but that's fundamentally true.
So I didn't take offence to this in the same way, I didn't take issue with it like you have, although now I see your point. But I think for me, what overrides it is I just think it's an amusing satire on the creative industry. I completely basically a creative industry where the impoverished creatives aren't rewarded or recognised for their hard work.
Not familiar at all.
What are you talking about?
But are given makeshift homemade awards and that is their recompense. I just found it very amusing. And I think it's one of those industry things, a bit like the franchise where we find it really, well, at least I found it really funny because I was like, oh, that sounds weirdly familiar. And also the take on the creatives themselves. So the character played by McElhenney, I think his name's Ian.
And
But they say Iron, but it's Ian, right? Because I checked.
His name's Iron. You know, like Iron Ziering from Beverly Hills 90210.
Oh, okay, yeah. Fine.
Just pronounced to me. Spelled Ian. Iron.
Please, can I just say something? I struggle with names enough, and then this bullshit starts up.
And now they're messing with the name Ian.
There's a Curb episode where Larry calls someone Ian. His name is IAN, and he goes, Ian? Ian? Like that. And he goes, no, Iron, Ian.
Don't make it more confusing. Yeah, but yeah, anyway, so he's like got diamond stud earrings, he's got rings on all his fingers, a classic creative going through a midlife crisis. I just appreciated all these details. So, will I watch any more? Do you know what? I would go back to the beginning though, because I want to get to grips with the backstory of these characters. Because there's obviously a lot of interplay, history between them.
And also, you really need to understand Mythic Quest before the various expansions.
God.
Are you saying you will go back to the beginning? You're going to go back to the beginning?
If I had time, right. I would.
You've got time if you wanted to. You could.
Okay, if you don't want me to watch any of the shows coming up next week, sure.
Wow.
Time is
I told you, Boydie.
So is that thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumbs sideways?
Thumbs up. Thumbs up. I enjoyed it for the reasons outlined.
This is a rare Apple TV Plus blind spot for me, Mythic Quest, because it's been running pretty much since the service launched.
Yes.
And I have never massively got on with it. I've never objected to it. Like, every time I reviewed it, I said, yeah, it's quite funny. Will you watch any more? No. Like, it partly is because I'm not wild about, this format of TV show anyway. Like, sitcoms and whatnot.
No.
But...
Oh, my God.
Genuinely.
Please,
his friends, by the way, one of his favourite shows.
Where he pulls that face, I'm like...
You know, I don't often get on with comedy shows.
Yes.
Unless their humour and mine align, which is rare. And occasionally they do. Okay, Extraordinary, we talked about. I really found that funny. But it's unusual for me. And I like Conan from Cannes. This, though, I recognise it's actually quite well done, and Rob McElhenney is funny, but it didn't really make me laugh. I think Danny Pudi's obviously entertaining in this when he's in it. Charlotte Nickdow, who plays Poppy in it, she's great. But I don't massively care.
No.
Like Beth, I seem to recall, liked Mythic Quest.
Oh, yeah.
She's
got good taste.
But she enjoys the show.
I'll say it again.
But given the subject matter, which is MMO games, it is very much primed for me to like it.
But it's also comedy, so not really.
And it's also comedy. So it's like there's those two things warring against each other. But yeah, I don't care.
And also, as I alluded to earlier, this series begins with a sequence which is supposed to be an outlandish moment and then ends up being a dream sequence. And I was like...
I'm out. That's it. I'm done. Lazy
script.
I mean, as you say, the reason we are doing this on this week's episode is because everything else is embargoed and we couldn't do it. Like, we wouldn't normally jump into season four of a show that none of us watch and don't really have an interest in.
Exactly. So. Like, I'll say this, what I thought was that first scene, right, could have been real, as not a dream.
Yeah.
And there are things that happen elsewhere that could have been a dream.
Yes.
You haven't made this delineation enough. Summed up for me the problem with the whole show.
That is a very good point. You have a dream sequence that's completely whack, except it's not whack enough that it couldn't happen just normally in the show.
Exactly.
And actually, if that had just been something that was happening, you would have totally just Yeah. Bought it.
Yeah, it would have been
in keeping with those characters. So yeah, a slightly odd tonal thing. But you're right. It's more out there than The Office. Like, it's deliberately very, very heightened.
Yeah, it's too heightened.
But it's not as cringe-tastic, which I appreciate. So like, they're
pretty cringy, isn't it?
It's not that cringy. Yeah, it's quite light, I thought, on the cringe.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, Mythic Quest then, season 4 of which lands on Apple TV Plus. When, Boydie?
Wednesday, the 29th of January 2025.
Yeah, with a spin-off coming in a couple of months.
What is the spin-off going to be?
I think it's a standalone, like, companion thing. I don't know quite
what
the plot
is,
but we might end up. It might be fake news. I might be making it up. Who knows? But if not,
you
then at least.
In a dream sequence.
Yeah, well, we've now watched. See, one of the other reasons to review it this week is we watched this, and now when we review the spin-off show, we'll be like, yeah. I know my Mythic Quest.
Yes.
Kay be like, yeah, I've mainlined all 4 seasons in advance of this spin-off. Won't you, Kay?
Yes, I'm a professional like that.
Yeah, she is.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see.
What else is on this week? Yes.
As opposed to when you asked 20 minutes ago.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, Boydie, because that was cut out.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
Yes, to lift the veil, basically, James forgot that we reviewed.
Can I just say,
an amazing moment when I was accused of not doing the format of, like, the listener question by reading out the question and answering it, James entirely forgot that we reviewed 3 shows and actually started rapping after the second.
Do you know what's funny? Like, you mentioning this, like, I'm having, like, PTSD flashbacks, because when I was at school, I was forced by a teacher who didn't like me to enter the public speaking competition. And the public speaking, so there were 3 of us in this public speaking team, and part of my job as one of the public speakers was to be the chairman of the thing. So I had to pivot between the different
pivot section,
and I also had to do the kind of the wrapping up at the end and say goodnight to everyone. And while I was doing the thing, I got my cards out of order.
I
wrapped up the evening before it had finished.
Oh, no!
And so I did, and on behalf of that, I bid you all good night. And then there was this pregnant pause, this absolute silence where everyone just looked at each other, and then the other person just sort of stepped forward and went, anyway, and carried on with their bit. And I just went, oh, no.
Do you know what? You should have gone, just kidding.
Yeah. So that's my childhood trauma revisited there.
Oh,
it was quite... Dude, the irony is, of course, we fucking won anyway.
Of course you did.
But I did manage to turn it into a kind of a comedy bit when it came to my bit again, and I just kind of threw my cards all over the place.
If anyone's taking video footage of this incident James's childhood,
it's quite a thing for me. Did video cams exist then? No, it was in the 80s. No, there was no such thing as video or television.
I was also in debating group at school. I don't think I did that.
Were you? Well, this was public speaking. I did debating as well.
Public speaking.
We should never speak of that again.
What else is out this week? The answer to that question is, first of all, there's Miss Austin, which we talked about earlier, which is on Sunday.
Yeah.
It's embargoed until Tuesday, so we're going to do that in Pilot Plus. There is Uncanny, which is this show on BBC Two, which is kind of like dramatized stories of the macabre.
Yep.
Which comes from a podcast. Death in Paradise, Kay, your favourite?
Yes, I've watched 3 episodes and enjoyed it.
Friday, BBC One, 9 o'clock. The Recruit is back for its second season, which is the Netflix political espionage series.
Have we reviewed that before?
I can't remember either.
I have no recollection of it, but then this could be the one-in-one-out configuration of my brain at this point. So.
Yeah. It's like The Diplomat, but it's called The Recruit.
Mm.
I don't think it's as quite as juicy as
none the wiser.
But we have no recollection of really what it is.
Don't have much recollection of what it is. Actually, it's a fledgling CIA lawyer, Owen Hendricks, played by Noah Centineo of Black Adam fame, which Quintessa Swindell's in as well, by the way, gets a lesson in the world of tricky intelligence operatives.
I can confirm I haven't seen this.
Okay. I think that's about it. It's not a huge week. I mean, The Apprentice is back on BBC One, in case you're...
Thanks, Gordon. Yeah.
But that, I think, is the main shtick.
Okay. Friendly Neighbourhood Spider-Man, did you mention that?
Oh, no, yeah.
Yes, your Friendly Neighbourhood Spider-Man is on Disney Plus, which is an animated Spider-Man series.
That's probably why I didn't mention
Boydie,
it.
Of course, didn't mention because he hates all things animated.
I boycott animation.
You boycott it.
Yes.
What is our pick of the week?
This is tough.
Is it?
This week. Yeah, because I love Brian and Maggie, but then I did find Paradise very enjoyable.
I'm Paradise just because I couldn't stop watching it. Like, it was very addictive. So yeah,
I'm going to go Brian Maggie.
I'm going Brian and Maggie.
Yeah,
Yeah. Fuck you then.
Yeah. Well, Brian and Maggie is a four-star without you're debating whether to give three.
I am going to give it three. So, yes, yeah. I am going to give it three.
It's not, it is a recommendation.
Oh my gosh, Hugh, I feel like I can sleep tonight. So throughout this whole podcast, we've gone through his flip-flopping three, four. We've landed on a four.
It's a roller coaster.
We have not landed on a four.
Like, that's, you literally just said, didn't you?
I literally just said I was giving it three.
Oh, sorry.
I thought you misheard. Yeah, sorry. You're getting overexcited.
Sorry, Kay. Sorry, Kay. It's getting three stars. Okay, that is it. That is the podcast. We are finished. We are done. Wonderful. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you have, please do head over to a platform like Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5 vegetarian chicken burger rating. if you want to follow us on social media, we are at Kay Ribeiro, we are at Boyd Hilton, we are at James C. Dyer, and we're also at Pilot TV Pod, and we're across various things. It's almost got to the point now where it's ridiculous. It's like Threads and Blue Sky and Twitter and Instagram and this and that and the subreddit and all this stuff.
But you can find us
all over the place.
It was the flashback to his debating.
I'm really traumatized. I've relived this. It's that moment where you'd have like a crash zoom and it's all just played out.
This is
in my
awful.
Head.
You just watch it unravel before our eyes.
But do you know what? It was funny. Like that was a proper like cringe moment. It's possible. Like where this therapy, you could possibly trace my hatred of all things cringe back to that precise moment when I God, made that faux pas in the public speaking competition.
Absolutely explains everything.
Yeah.
Explains a lot.
It does. As we've already said on this week's Pilot Plus, we'll be doing Miss Austin, which is exciting. And on next week's show, let's have a look. What's coming up next week? What could we possibly be talking about?
Amanda Land is on, which is the spin-off from Motherland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. Well, Invincible season 3, yet. Boydie, on Prime.
Oh,
you
great.
Must be very excited about that.
Yeah.
Clean Slate, Accused season 2, The Sex Life of College Girls season 3.
Am I Being Unreasonable series 2?
Yes, you are, Boydie. Yeah. Oh, a TV show.
We
right.
have to do that.
That's great. There's a Spanish show I think would Love You to Death on Apple TV Plus.
Okay, we'll want to do that. Unforgotten is next week.
Well, is it though? Again, that's on that. I think that's on the Sunday.
It is on the Sunday, but that still falls within that week. Okay. But whether we'll be able to review it, it might be a bit.
Doesn't Sanjeev listen to this? Maybe he'll give us special dispensation.
Maybe we'll find the embargo in Sonny's backpack.
Yeah,
maybe
we'll find out. Okay, that is it. We're done. We're finished. We're out. We'll see you on Thursday, or indeed on Monday, depending on whether or not you subscribe to Pilot Plus. I'm off to go and see my therapist about the public speaking incident. Pilot out.